really in taking a serious examination of ourselves and where we are spiritually. And there is a real need for us to not minimize any of these previous steps. But because I want to spend my time on the fourth step, which is called practice acts of kindness, I happen to have chosen a passage in 1 John chapter 3, verse 16 through 19. I chose that. Now, I fully recognize the context that, first and foremost, this is a passage that talks about believers reaching out to other believers. But it expresses how it is to be done and how we are to manifest the love of Christ so clearly. And I want to point out to you that there are the most commonly quoted Old Testament passage is another one that is found right after love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy mind, with all thy soul. And it goes on to that. Love your neighbor as yourself. And that is repeated several times in the New Testament. It's a repeat of a Leviticus passage. And it is love your neighbors. It's talking about this. This passage happens to express how we can do this as well as any of them. I debated between it and Luke, where it talks about the Good Samaritan reaching out to the ones that he was past and how he invested in them. But in the end, I felt compelled to come back to this, saying, this is not only the way we ought to treat other believers, it literally is the way we ought to engage other people. We are to be known by our love, and this is a huge issue in a day and age when we're all running very fast, and it is extremely easy to even live next to people and never meet them. You recognize that? In where I grew up, that would have been just hard. When I was a young boy, that would have been hard for me to imagine anybody would live that way. When our doors were never locked in our house, the car keys were always left in the cars. You know, they just, you'd go home and you would turn off your car and your keys. Why wouldn't you leave them in the ignition? I mean, that's the obvious. That's where you're going to need them next. You leave them there. Why can you do that? I come home as a young adult with my children, and everybody recognizes that they're my kids because they obviously look like the Ormistons. And they look like Charlie's. They're you know, that's my father's name. They're Charlie's grandkids. They surely are. And it was a different day. You knew people. You interacted with people. Not so any longer. And that is troubling and very challenging to us as believers, because we are to be connecting with other people by the way we invest in their lives. Having said that, what does friendship of the world look like? Well, we see a lot of that modeled. We see it modeled not only in lives of other people, maybe, well, even in our own lives in some situation, regrettably. But we clearly see it in our television. We see it in any sort of the videos that are available. You see this kind of artificial concern and compassion for others. And I say artificial because they often get irritated when pressure comes, and they respond to that other person. Why are you doing that? You know, it's an offense. And we learn to do that. Yeah, we recognize that we can hear the word but never do anything. We talk about loving our neighbors and we don't even greet them or know them. I think of how religion has become such a show, and it's even become a show to the point that it's many studies, it's entertainment. It's a free entertainment relative, and it's really good concerts. But that is not what Christianity is supposed to be about. Our culture is very, very good at saying, you deserve it, you don't. And we are very partial towards some, and others, we just don't give them the time of day because of circumstances. Selfishness, envy, all of these things are really prevalent in our narcissistic culture. And it doesn't set us up well for making the friendships that we are commanded to make. We I can really get annoyed in my neighborhood by some of the things that go on. And you know what? You can sometimes start responding to that in proportion to the annoyance that of what's going on. And in reality, drive people away that otherwise are the very people that you could be reaching for Christ. Because we have our rights. I have a right to not have people go for the McDonald's and walk down the street and get in front of my house and finish their whatever their meal was, and then just take the bag and just throw it. And they walk by the trash can that I have on the corner that I often empty for the city. You know, they understand I take care of it, but they walk right by it. They walk across the street and just drop. Now, there is a challenge to us on this. I want them to learn to be a better citizen. But I want to make sure that in my process of trying to help them learn how to be a better citizen, I don't cause strife to the point where I have no relationship. And frankly, I have learned the best way I deal with that is I go quietly out there, hopefully when they're watching, and pick it up and throw it away. It's self-evident that, you know, the place looks better if the trash isn't left on the street. How do we learn to love the way Christ learned? And that's what this passage is so beautiful about. That's what makes it so beautiful. It literally is what it talks about. What does that involve? Us being loving like Christ wants us to. I'll tell you one thing, it involves a commitment and a decision that you're going to do it. You're going to say, hey, I am going to be an example of Christ's love as I go through the day. And that will not happen unless you naturally do. Otherwise, you'll get up and you'll say, I've got this to do and that to do. And the things to do list will trump everything. What can we do to grow more loving towards others? Well, this passage really brings out some truths that I want to bring forward. Now, I'm going to read the first 18. I'll come back to the 19th just once, but it is an important point in the verse 19. By this we know. That, by the way, is gnosko. It is a Greek word that talks about knowledge. Now, it is the knowledge that you gather from life experiences. It clearly has that emphasis. But he was saying, this we know love. This is how we do it. This is how we know about it. You ought to know about it too, and it's because of Christ. That's the point. You and I ought to know about love from a biblical standpoint by learning and getting into a deeper and deeper relationship with Jesus Christ. Yet I have seen people grow in their knowledge of Jesus Christ, but not connect it to the practical aspect of who he is and what he has done. Notice what the passage says. By this we know, because he laid down his life for us, that we also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. Now, did you really know that? Well, intellectually. But do you know it practically? Okay. And I'm telling you, the mere fact that John wrote this in the epistles says that even in the first century, the believers had a disconnect here. They knew that Christ died for them. That's why they're a believer, and that's why they're willing to go through persecution and suffer. But they didn't totally grasp it. For he wouldn't have had to say this. And we ought to lay down. Ought. Not that you are laying down your life. He says you ought to do this. This is what you should be doing. That implies that a good many weren't doing it. That's my point. We also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. And now note verse 17. But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? He raises the question. And he was saying to the people, as I am saying to you today, what do you think it's telling you? It's telling you there's a disconnect from saying that, yes, I know how Jesus loved me so much and how I ought to love others. But there's a disconnect here. Or he wouldn't have written it, especially with this question concept at the end of 17. Then he comes back in verse 18. My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue. Interesting phrase. But in deed and in truth. There is, if you don't recognize it, this phrase right here, in word and in tongue, are up against in deed and in truth. And they're sitting there and saying, they're not the same. And we're over here doing this a lot, but we're having a little problem connecting with the other half of this. God's approach is modeled very clearly for us. It has been, it was, it stands before us today. We know that Jesus Christ went willingly to the cross. He was not martyred. You recognize, he was not martyred. He willingly submitted to this whole process. It was part of the plan. He went there and he died willingly to pay the price for our sins because he loved us. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believe in him should not perish but have everlasting life. It's all about how he demonstrated his love by giving of himself to meet the needs that we had, and that was to have our sins paid for. And he's saying, therefore, we ought be doing that for one another and for others. Make sense? It's the God's approach is modeled before us. And we ought to pay attention. We ought to take note of it. But I think in some respects they do, but more problematic is the next phrase. The real problem is presented, and it's right here. But whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? What's the problem? The problem is he's going about life, and he's not really seeing what's going on. He's just running along. And if you want to reach people for Christ, this is really, really a critical item. You've got to start paying attention to the face, to the life circumstances, and you've got to care about other people. Even when it's inconvenient. Here I am, a pastor of a quarter century, pastoring in this type of a neighborhood, and there are still days when I get the phone calls and my flesh responds and says, I don't want to hear about this. You know, I get a phone call and you start hearing the setup and you say, I don't have any energy nor time. I cannot deal with this. That's what's going on inside. But see, it wasn't easy for the Lord to do what he did. And he is asking for us to get over ourselves. It's not about us. It's not whether it's convenient. It's whether this is what God would have us to do. God's solution is clarified. He comes back. My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue. He's talking about us bragging about this and talking about, oh, yes, I love the Lord and I love my neighbors. And I will do what I can do to help all of the people. And they talk about this. And he says, that's not what we're looking for. We're looking for the deed and done in truth. Stop playing a game. Stop running a script. Stop making up excuses. Invest in others. Christian love is both positive and negative. This passage that I'm going to show you next is a passage from Isaiah. But I just wanted to point out to you that if you're wondering where you ought to first look for people you can connect with, this Isaiah passage and the next passage in Matthew give you some good clues of where you might want to start to look, at least, for people you can connect with. Wash yourself, make yourself clean. So that means getting right. You know, just getting rid of the, if you have sin, you confess it. Put away the evil of your doing from before my eyes. So he's saying, get right. Cease to do evil. That's a good idea. If you want to be used to the Lord, it's really a great idea to commit to not doing the garbage. Now, 99% of the time, you don't even have to have anybody even hint at what the garbage is. You know what it is. Stop it. But notice what it goes on to say. Learn to do good. Seek justice. Rebuke the oppressor. Defend the fatherless and plead for the widow. In other words, look around and see who are hurting. And particularly invest in them if you want to be used of the Lord. People that are hurting. I went back here. In Matthew, you see this is Matthew chapter 25 is talking about a future time when we're going to finally be before the Lord and the Lord is going to evaluate how things have gone. It's interesting in this context. Notice what he says. For I was hungry, Jesus was saying this, and you gave me food, and I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Now, by the way, look at these things. Those give us a little clue where if you're really trying to say, hey, you know what, I want to really get more used of the Lord, start looking for people that fall into these categories that are really disenfranchised. That's a good place. Notice what it says. And the king answered, they had said, where have we ever seen, when have we ever done that? Or where have we ever seen that done? And the king will answer and say to them, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. We really, really need to slow up a little bit and look around. See, in this John passage, verse 17, the number one thing that wasn't going on was an awareness. They were oblivious. They were oblivious to all the pain that was going on. Now, I don't know about you, but all you have to do is in the coffee break time between Sunday school and church, I walk in there often, I just look around. And you just look around, and even now you look around, and you can see it on the people's faces, the ones that are hurting. Maybe a week ago they were smiling, but this week they're not smiling. You understand? We need to tune in to those type of nonverbal signals and be God's instrument to be a blessing. Self-preservation. That is the number one law in physical life. Do you know that? You don't even have to train anybody this. I'm not going to give the details, but remember the tornado hit? You know, and a tornado hits, and it is coming in on you, and all of your manners have a tendency to kind of evaporate, and it's everybody for themselves getting to the basement. Is that not true? That's what I'm talking about. The physical life. I understand law number one. I see some seeking down, and I wasn't trying to point out anything, but it is what it is. As a matter of fact, you get into, I will always remember when, it's now 35 years ago, when I was in my one and only earthquake. I was giving a lecture on about an eighth story of a building out in California, and then there was an earthquake. The first tremor came in, and everybody else knew what was going on, but I'm from North Dakota. I didn't know what was going on. It was surely creepy. All of a sudden, things were shaking, and then everybody started to bolt. I mean, really bolt for the stairs. Now, I kind of sat there as I watched my class evaporate, and the lecture of everybody's gone. And I said, you know what? I don't know what's going on, but clearly they all know what's going on, and I'm going with them. And when I got into that mode, it was not a question of, oh, yes, you go first down the steps. No. Everyone, and it was dangerous. For like myself, I think I was skipping about four steps. I was just jumping from one to the other, and trying to dodge. Okay, that's self-preservation. I'm telling you, you don't have to train it. It's there. But I'll tell you what, in the spiritual life, it ought to be as equally automatic, and that is self-sacrifice. But it isn't. You really need to pray and purpose to make that part of the way you think of life. That others, Christ and others, are first. Notice this. Back here, we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. This is beautiful for me. This to me was a huge, it's like, I can't believe I missed it before, but plural. For the brethren, we ought to do this for the brethren. And then you go into the very next verse and you're having problems. Okay, they're not doing it. You notice what happened in the next verse? It was fine when he was talking in broad generalities. He was all in the program, but it got to the individual doing it, and it said, and he sees his brother. Now it's individual. Now it's me and him, and am I going to do what I'm going to do for that person, what I should do for the person? And it was in that situation he was able to look the other way and keep going. Do you get the point? In this broad way, we can say, yeah, I'm on the team, man. I'm all in. But then when it comes your turn to do it, it's easy just to overlook it and keep rolling. Dangerous stuff. The Christian love is personal. And where it comes out is in one-on-one. It's rare that you and I can implement something for a masses. But every one of us can be a positive impact on an individual. Number two, when it comes down here, it is active, not passive. It's everything to do with deeds and truth. Get my point? He goes on to say, and by this we know that we are of the truth and shall assure our hearts before him. That is a fascinating verse, and the next one too, but I'm just using 19 for a second. The Apostle Paul was telling the believers that this is really, really critical that you do this, because if you do it right, your heart will give you assurance that you're walking with the Lord. That's what it's saying. And boy, do I see that personally. When I have done right and sacrificially gone on my way to be a blessing to someone else and plug in their lives, whether they deserve it or don't deserve it, it's not the issue. I'm not doing it first and foremost for them. I'm doing it first and foremost because of who the Lord is. And when you do that, there will be a testimony in your heart that says, that's what God intends for me to do. I should be doing this all the time, not just some of the time. Three ways to grow in love. One, whoops, I got to go here. This first one, this one out here, reminds me of this truth. Open your eyes and look more closely. Another way to say that is slow up and smell the roses. Don't go so fast that you miss what's happening. That happens all the time, and it's really easy to do, and you can get to the end of the day and be absolutely exhausted from all you've done. But if you quietly think about it, you say, whoa, I should have done that instead. Number two, the first and the last verse remind me of the importance to not talk about things, but to roll up your sleeves and get to work. Purpose to say, you know what, I am going to be used to the Lord to be a blessing in someone's life today. Somehow or another, I am going to find some way to do a kind act for others. It may simply be a word, just a word of encouragement. But you know what, it really, really is a blessing when you start to do it, because your heart gets reaffirmed. Hey, I ought to be doing this more. I think I really made a difference. I'm not going to point out the individual. I already did a little on an earlier one, and I didn't mean to, actually. But at the coffee break time, I had one conversation with an individual, because I saw them, and they just kind of looked sad, and I went over and greeted them, talked with them. And in the conversation, we were able to talk about life. And you know what? I walked away from that, and I said, that's what we're talking about. Just coming alongside and hearing what's going on and just encouraging them in Christ. It's huge. And it's so not found in our normal culture right now. And then the last, let me say this, rolling up your sleeves, it has everything to do with giving of yourself. It always costs you something, but it's a blessed thing to give away. You just get so blessed for doing so. Your resources. And I'll come back and give you an illustration from yesteryear on that one that really touched my heart. Your time. Yes, it'll take your resource, take your time. It'll take of you. It'll cost you. It'll cost you the use of your talents, your skills. But it's a blessing. Open your heart and take a chance. That's the point. Open your heart and take a chance. How many of you have ever read War and Peace? It is one of the most fascinating pieces of literature. It's just fascinating. I don't know that I have no desire to read it again, so let's just put it. I have no desire, but I remember having to read it. And it was for a literature class, and it was challenging, to say the least, just the way it was compiling three different types of literature. This man, I have no idea what his spiritual well-being is. He's dead, but I don't have a lot of hope for it. Let's just say that. There was no reason to believe. But here is what he did record in one of his writings, and I'll just paraphrase. This man, Leo, was going about, I believe it was London, and someone came up to him, and he was really in need, and Leo looked in his pockets, and he says, "Sir, brother, I am so sad. If I had any money with me, I would give it to you, brother. I would give it to you. But I don't." He felt so bad about that. And he recorded this. And then he recorded the man's response, which left a substantial impact on this quite successful author. You know what the man said? "No, no, don't feel bad about it. You have been a great blessing to me." And apparently Leo looks back and goes, "What do you mean? I don't have any money. I would give it to you." "No, because you called me brother." See the point? That meant more to this guy than getting the money for a bowl of soup. Because he recognized him as a human being and acknowledged him as one, they were equal. Now, this is a much better author. Now, if we're going to advocate authors, read C.S. Lewis, okay? Don't go back to War and Peace and stuff like that. But C.S. Lewis, in one of his books, made this. And I thought the best thing I could do is just write it and read it. I mean, put it up there and read it to you. He talks about this very issue, and he says, "To love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything, and your heart will certainly be wrung and possibly be broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give your heart to no one, not even to an animal. Wrap it carefully around with hobbies and little luxuries and avoid all entanglements. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, and irredeemable." That's not good, by the way. "The only place outside of heaven where you can be perfectly safe from all the danger of love is hell." What was C.S. Lewis saying? He was saying, give away your heart. Invest in others. Yes, it is dangerous. Yes, you get hurt in relationships, but it is what makes life rich. And it is the way we can connect for Christ. It is huge, and it is desperately needed in the culture in which we are living. For all of us, to look at those that are closest. When I was thinking about this and meditating on what I would say today, I was convicted that I haven't been doing enough of that with my wife. I get going really quick, and all of a sudden I recognize, you know what? When have I invested in her? It's sad, but that's what the hectic life does for us. Invest in others for the cause of Christ, particularly for the cause of reaching the lost. The lost are really hurting people. And they're just like us, except they haven't had who Christ is explained to them. What a privilege. Ways to grow in love. Open your eyes and start looking around. Number two, roll up your sleeves and get to work. Invest in others. And open your heart and take a chance. It is what makes life so worth living. It adds the value, the beauty, and the depth. We're going to sing this song as we transition into the Lord's table. We're going to ask the deacons to come forward. And, you know, as I think about that, I don't have an assistant. So, Tim, would you mind coming up here and helping us with the Lord's table? Why don't you stand with me and let's sing this. And the reason this hymn is here at this point is this is what we're talking about. Oh, to be like Jesus Christ. That's what we need to do in our day and age if we want to reach the lost. It's not really too mystical. It is very practical. Let's sing this.